You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Please clap your hands for your host, Bree Davey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Hello, Denver. Are you still there? Thank you for being here. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. This is my new friend, Carly. We talked on the phone last week for 10 minutes, but
we did. Yeah,
give Carly a hand.
Thank you.
Carly's a mental
Thank
health
you, Corey.
Professional. Yes. Thank you, Corey. Would you tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are?
Sure. So I'm Carly Salon. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and a licensed addiction counselor. I work with the Mental Health Center of Denver and I'm the assistant program manager for the Crisis Intervention Response Unit. And we pair licensed mental health clinicians with Denver police. And we ride along in the cars all day and respond to mental health calls and any other calls where crisis intervention or de-escalation might be needed, which is most police calls.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like this is something that we could probably pair with every police officer everywhere as a start. But
we like to think so.
What can you talk a little bit or explain what crisis intervention is?
Sure. So when someone is in any self-identified crisis, and that could be I lost my housing or I don't have food to eat today or I lost my ID or, you know, anything as big as a crime was committed, you know, they were assaulted or something like that went down, we can go in and we can kind of align with them and, you know, validate what they're feeling and maybe try to help use some de-escalation skills to kind of calm the conversation down so that the police can get the information that they need in what is a very, very difficult time and might be even the worst day in this person's life. Provide them resources and make sure that they're doing okay and that they can kind of move forward not being in crisis.
Okay. And how did this program with the Denver Police come about that you're a part of?
So in 2015, Denver Police realized that they were responding to an inordinate number of mental health calls. Their mental health call stats were through the roof. So they started discussions with the city and Mental Health Center of Denver to try to see if they could pair with mental health clinicians because they thought that it would be useful. So in April of 2016, started with six clinicians, and we added eight more, plus a behavioral health navigator in the jail. So we've expanded quite a bit, but started off as like a little pilot program and went out in the cars with the police officers, which was a weird first day. I mean, you don't really think social workers and police officers. I think they were a little scared we were gonna like hug them. You know, and we were just like, we have no idea what to expect. Like, this was never what I thought I'd be doing. But this program wouldn't have been possible if the Denver police didn't see the value in what we do and think that this was useful to have on scene with them. So we started riding around and quickly figured out that there's a lot of stuff that we could be a part of on a day-to-day, whether that's a car accident and someone's just having such a trauma response from the car accident that they can't provide information to the officer and we can help with that, or, you know, a true mental health call where we can sit with someone and talk about symptoms and what they're trying to work on and what their obstacles are and try to think of outside of the box solutions to provide resources and help them meet their goals.
Okay. And when you respond to a call, I guess 911 sort of just this overarching thing, right?
Yes.
That people call for literally anything.
Yes.
And how do they determine what is a mental health call or not?
So because that's like kind of interesting because a lot of the calls that come in aren't necessarily coming in as mental health calls, but we find out later that they are. So that's actually interesting that you bring that up because we believe that the call volume for Denver for mental health calls is actually much higher than what the stats report because they're not always coming in as mental health calls, and that's what they're documented as. So it could be, you know, an altercation between two people, and you show up and, you know, we kind of determine that maybe there's some mental health stuff at play, but that's not what the initial call was documented as. So.
And when you, like, can you sort of walk us through what it looks like when you show up on the scene of something? Because I think a lot of times, almost all of what we see when it involves police, especially folks that are going through a mental health crisis, it ends really ugly. Or there's social justice issues clearly happening. And so what does it look like when you show up to a scene and what do you do? Like, do you go in first or sort of how do you determine?
Yep. So officer always makes sure the scene's safe because I am not useful in an unsafe situation. I don't, you know, we found out pretty quickly also that we're pretty fearless, and the cops are like, wait, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, what? These are my people.
This is,
you know. So they're much more safety oriented, and they do an awesome job at making sure we're safe, better than we do a lot of times, truthfully. So we will get there. They'll make sure that the scene's safe, and then the officers are totally, totally fine with us taking the lead on the mental health call, and they'll just kind of step back and let us do our thing and just make sure we're safe and can help us any way that they can. It's pretty cool. The only time, you know, we're not able to sort of jump right in is when there's a weapon or things are unsafe because we're not trained for that type of stuff.
Sure. And I know when you and I talked last week, you said that police officers in going through training receive about 40 hours of mental health training.
They do.
And that may seem like a lot, but probably is not compared to what they're going through. Do you know what that training looks like or sort of how you complement that?
Yeah, for sure. So I actually, I'm lucky enough to teach part of those classes to the Denver Police and the Denver Sheriff's Department. It's called Crisis Intervention Training. And they go through all different symptoms, how to recognize mental illness, how to deal, you know, with someone who has a mental illness, what, you know, verbal techniques that you can use that might be, you know, more well received or gentler with someone in crisis. We talk about co-occurring disorders, which is a mental health diagnosis and a substance use disorder diagnosis, and what that might look like and how to best kind of de-escalate situations with people who might be dealing with those issues. And, you know, they talk about people with developmental disabilities. They kind of go through the whole gamut of, you know, this is what you could encounter on the street, and this is how to recognize it, and this is how to best deal with it. It's a crash course for sure. You know, I think 40 hours a week is probably more than a lot of police departments across the country get. It's a national training program, so there are departments across the country that use the same program. But the officers are very, very quick to say, like, hey, you know, we deal with the same populations all day, but you have a master's degree and a clinical license, and I, you know, signed up for this job to keep my neighborhood safe. You know, I don't think that they really expected to be doing so much crisis work and mental health work and getting involved in those kinds of situations. So they're very, very open and happy to have people with expertise with them. And it's been my experience that, you know, the officers really want to offer some kind of assistance or help, especially, you know, when they recognize someone's struggling, and they love that we're able to do that when they can't.
Sure. My mom works in an ER, so we disagree a lot about police, obviously, because they're her coworkers. Mm-hmm. And to me, I see a different side through a social justice lens. But I think that it is interesting to think about it as like they're not trained in this, and maybe they wouldn't even think that that is part of their job.
So the way that I kind of, the analogy I bring up is like, you would not want me on a robbery call. I don't have any clue what to do. I don't have any training in that. I would be terrible and probably, you know, not do the right thing and, you know, just not be good. So it's kind of the same. You're throwing somebody into a very, very delicate, complicated situation, and it can get really tough. And if you don't have the correct training and the educational background to kind of work with mental health and, you know how to best just kind of sit with people and align with people. And, you know, even if they don't want resources, to just be able to say, like, this is a really bad day. I get that. What can we do, you know, to help you? Even if that's, you know, do you need food from King Soopers?
Sure, you know? Sure. And I know also when we talked earlier, this this idea that a lot of times when police are called, folks in this situation either end up in jail or end up in the hospital. And that may not necessarily really be the needed outcome. So what kinds of things do you see? Like, do you see that with your work and the police, you're able to keep people from going either of those directions? Or
yeah, so we've had a 2% arrest rate And that's typically because someone committed a pretty egregious crime that, you know, we don't have a another solution for. There needs to be, you know, that is the solution at that point. And we send people to hospital when they're a danger to themselves or, you know, danger to others, and they meet that mental health hold criteria, and that's our obligation with our clinical license. But we, you know, we love a creative solution. And, you know, we want to get you connected with whatever services are going to help you live your best life. And if that means that I need to come pick you up for your intake appointment and drive you to that intake appointment, then that's what we'll do. Or if you need bus tickets or connection to many of the, you know, community partners that we work with that are so great, we will really do like a warm handoff and make sure that those other options are looked at. And I think those are options police didn't have before. Because when you call law enforcement, you know, it's jail or hospital. That's kind of, you know, what their options are. And we have all done case management for, you know, high intensity teams and a couple years in that job, and you'll learn the ins and outs of thinking outside the box and the different things that are available around the city to help people. The Walk-In Crisis Center at Colfax and Claremont is another great option that we use all the time. They're 24/7, 365, and you can walk in there for any self-identified crisis. So, you know, if you're having a tough day and you're not quite meeting a hospital level, but, you know, you need some support and we're concerned about you, we can use that too. So that's a great option and less restrictive for sure.
I didn't know that existed. That's super awesome. That is 24 hours, because I think a lot of times it's like clinic hours are not realistic to real life.
I brought you little cards with the address and the phone number.
Awesome. So I actually had a friend on Facebook that wanted to be here but couldn't, and he wanted to know, you know, sort of in his ideal world, the police would not exist. How do you sort of see the ideal world for, because I'm trying to figure out how to say this, because I personally am not a fan of the police and how things are handled, or how I see most things handled, especially in, like we were talking earlier, my neighborhood, for instance. There's a lot of police presence, and it's not a positive thing. So sort of what is your thought process, maybe personally, around police in the community?
For sure. I will say I didn't know what to expect from this job. I really didn't. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, we have to work together towards a solution, right? And if we're not willing to partner and kind of work towards best practices or what should be happening, then I don't think anything's going to change, right? And, you know, I have no clue what to expect. But I will say I've been in this position 2 years, and it has improved my opinion of police. I see great things happen every day. And, you know, there's probably a lot of police departments across the country that would never even consider putting a social worker in their car. And that shows me that they're not embarrassed of what they're doing. They're well, you know, it's all out on the table. We're in their cars every day, and that they want to do better for their city as well. I think they realized that they weren't meeting the need of this population, and brought in kind of subject matter experts to help them with that. So I know that it is, you know, a very interesting climate for law enforcement, but I see a huge culture shift in Denver every day. I see them working on it from the sheriffs to the police department, and, you know, nobody's perfect, right? But I see genuine effort to move towards good community policing and 20th century policing for 20th century problems, you know, 21st century problems.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. What do you, like, what, I guess, what brought you to, because I would say someone that's going into social work doesn't necessarily think, oh, I can't wait to go work with the police. What brought you to this position or into this role?
Well, I was doing case management on a high-intensity treatment team at Mental Health Center of Denver, and was managing a caseload of 17 to 21 severely, you know, persistently mentally ill clients. Loved my work, loved working with the people that I worked with. But I wanted kind of that next step, right? I was going to get to full licensure and was kind of looking for what I would do next. And I always was interested in criminal justice for some reason. It was always kind of in the back of my mind. Never really knew exactly what I wanted to do, but it was an interest. And I actually started as the behavioral health navigator for this team in the city jail. So I was in the city jail every day connecting people to mental health treatment prior to release. So I would go in, I'd do their clinical intake, I would get them all set up with Mental Health Center of Denver so that when they walked out the door, they could go up and meet their case manager and access services. Because before, they would have to call the intake line, make an appointment, you know, very difficult to make it to the appointment. And we joked, you know, they'd give them the Mental Health Center of Denver card at the jail and there'd be a pile of them in the garbage. Because, you know, when you don't have food and you don't have a place to live and you don't have a car and you don't have a cell phone and you maybe don't have an ID, you know, priorities, right? So we tried to kind of break down that barrier and bring the intake department into the jail so that we could get that done and people could access their services without kind of the rigmarole of scheduling and transportation and all that stuff. So this position opened up and I jumped on it and I, you know, really tried to crush it in my interview and luckily got the job. And then after about a year of doing that, assistant manager position opened up with the expansion and I was able to move into that role. And now I'm one of the managers of the team.
Cool.
Which has been pretty cool.
And I know you're also a licensed addiction counselor.
I am.
Can you talk a little about, do you see calls related to addiction or drug use? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you do, but sort of what does that look like when you go to a call like that, and how does your experience inform what you do there?
Yeah, for sure. You know, big harm reductionist. You know, I'll support you wherever you're at. If we need to talk about how you use safely, then that's what we're going to talk about. And I'm going to send you to the Harm Reduction Action Center, and we're going to, you know, get you all those resources. If you're, you know, wanting to make a change in your life, I will totally, you know, facilitate that as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, we don't separate, you know, it's like, oh, is this because of drug use? Is this because, we don't even get into that. Doesn't matter. We're dealing with the symptoms that are presenting now, and we're going to work on what you identify as important in your life, because, you know, we all know how well it works when someone kind of browbeats you into making a decision to change. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't work for me.
It doesn't work for as a recovering addict. It
and, you know, we've had a ton of success. I've had a ton of clients who, you know, maybe when I met them, they weren't ready to work on sobriety or even think about, like, hey, I might want to make a change. And, you know, 8 months, 10 months later, they call you and they're like, hey, I want to get into treatment, you know. But that's because we supported them where they were at from the beginning, you know, and there's that trust and there's that rapport. So at the end of the day, you know, we're going to deal with whatever you bring to the table and there's no judgment. And, you know, we're not here to try to push our agenda or what we think. You know, you're the expert on your own life, right? So if someone is, you know, using substances and that's affecting their mental health, you know, we'll have a discussion with them about that and we'll kind of inform them about that. But at the end of the day, I'm not there to try to get you to do anything you don't want to do.
Sure, sure. I don't know how long you've been in Denver, but I'm sort of curious as to, as we've seen, obviously, our population experiencing homelessness grow because of also direct, I think it's a direct result of the growth.
Yeah.
Have you seen an increase in certain kinds of calls or certain areas or anything that you could maybe attribute to that?
Yeah, so I've been here 4 years. It'll be 4 years next month. Thanks for having me. so, I mean, I think that in 2015, they saw a big spike. Denver police saw a big spike in mental health-related calls. So I think it's definitely ramped up. And as we know, you know, affordable housing and all that kind of stuff, people are losing housing and forced out on the street. And I'm sorry, you just get arrested more frequently outside than you do inside. You know, I mean, I could do a lot of stuff in my house that right. No one would ever know about. But if you're in the park or on the sidewalk, you're kind of out there and people call on you. And I think that has all kind of, you know, manifested into the high call volume that Denver police is seeing recently in the last couple of years.
So that could also be another positive. If we were possibly able to house people, we would be keeping them out of these situations with the police.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what they were that's what they're trying to look at with the social impact bond housing. I don't know. Yeah, so, you know, Mental Health Center Denver and the Coalition have built these apartment buildings, beautiful apartment buildings, to take some of, you know, people who have frequent contact with police in jail, ERs, and they give them housing. And they kind of said, well, we'll kind of see what happens and see if this decreases your contact. And, I mean, I think that's kind of a no-brainer, I think. But part of how we've been involved in that, or how I've been involved in that, is that, you know, we had people in jail who had to get out of jail by a certain date to access that housing. So we had them called into jail, called into court for reconsideration, and kind of said to the judge, like, hey, there's an amazing opportunity, you know, that they should be able to take advantage of. And this could take someone who's been cycling in and out of these systems for years and years, sometimes even decades, and really turn it around, you know, and we were successful. Every judge that I went in front of that I made that case to, they let him get out to access that housing. And, you know, maybe they had to do some probation or there was a suspended sentence. But the point is that they were able to get out and move into that housing. That opportunity wasn't lost.
So do you see a lot of on that sort of side of the justice system when we get into courts and judges, do you see them being as willing to work with people like you who are interested in dealing with mental health issues versus just continuing to throw
For sure, because, you know, I think the criminal justice system as a whole, you know, has some inkling that what we've been doing so far isn't working. You know, they see the, you know, it's a revolving door a lot of times, and I think there is this kind of push and desire and need to be like, hey, you know, there's a lot of really progressive ideas and they seem to be working a lot of other places. Let's try some of that here. I mean, we have a ton of treatment courts and kind of restorative justice options that are really great. And, you know, we could always use more resources and more programs, but there's definitely some good options in Denver.
And what I've heard too a lot of times, like I've talked to Lisa at the Harm Reduction Action Center quite a bit about this, is there are folks that come in and say, I do want treatment today, and you don't have anywhere to send them. What do you do when you're in a call situation like that and you do end up with somebody who could really use treatment, but you don't have anywhere, or where do you go from there at that step?
That's not a great day for us, right? When someone wants something and you can't provide it. You know, we have made friends with a lot of people so that if there is an available bed or there is somewhere that I could send you, I know someone to call, you know, we know someone to call so that we can try to get you in. But, you know, the truth is that we could use more, right? And we've had a lot of substance use treatment centers close recently, and it's just getting smaller. So if I'm really in a jam and I've absolutely nowhere to send somebody, I will at least make sure that I can get them, whether that's a motel, so you can rest and you can eat and shower. And, you know, I try to build that rapport so that when I do have somewhere that you can go, that we could get you there and we're still in touch and, you know, you still trust me. Sure. So if we're really at a loss, we'll just try to support and do the best we can for people until we can kind of get that in. But Mental Health Center of Denver has a 6-month inpatient substance abuse treatment facility for men and women separate. So we have kind of, you know, we can work some things within our own agency, and the staff at Mental Health Center of Denver is great about kind of hearing us when we call and say, hey, you know, we really need a bed. When can we get somebody in? So we just really advocate on behalf of the client to try to work some miracles.
That's awesome. And you brought up the idea of trust. I wonder, again, we're looking at policing in communities that have been historically treated not well by the police. How do you go into a situation knowing that they, how do you get folks to trust you when you are working directly with the police? Because, you know, if they don't trust the police, why would they trust you?
Well, and that's been one of the kind of the cool things about our partnership, is that sometimes they don't want to talk to police at all, but they'll talk to, you know, I'm not an officer. I'm not in a uniform. I don't have a weapon. A lot of times people do a very good job of separating, and we don't really get lumped into like, oh, well, you're police, you're an officer. You know, we introduce ourselves as clinicians that work with the Denver police. You know, we don't wear dark blue, black, you know, we wear like bright blue and try to, you know, distinguish ourselves. And I mean, you know, some people just don't kind of want to talk to you, and that's okay. Some people in jail didn't want to talk to me either. You know, it's just not a good day for them, or it wasn't the right time. And you know, you give them your contact information and hope that they reach out in the future. But we really have not had a ton of issues on scene where we were associated with police, and that kind of negatively affected our work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. In your, like, in the, if there was an ideal world, because, like, I, you know, we could, people call 911 for all sorts of things. Yeah. What would be the like, a better way that we could deal with if someone's in, seems to be in a crisis, or we see, you know, we're witnessing something that seems like is not necessarily something we need to call the police for?
For sure. The Colorado Crisis Line is one of my favorite resources. You can call, you can text, they will call and follow up. You can call on someone else and they will call and follow up with them. I mean, they do an unbelievable job. I mean, of course, if there's any safety concerns, or, you know, looks like someone could be in danger, physical danger, or hurt someone, you know, you want to call 911 for stuff like that, the dangerous stuff. But, you know, the walk-in center and the crisis line are like my tools in my back pocket. The Colorado Crisis Line will provide resources. I've called and been like, I need a substance use treatment facility that will take someone with diabetes. And they'll say, okay, you know, let me look at my thing. And they'll give me a whole list. It's great. So, you know, you can call for a crisis, you can call for resources, they'll follow up, they will dispatch mobile crisis or police, like, if needed, but, you know, that's certainly not their first go-to. And those are probably my two recommendations for when someone looks like they're, you know, having a rough time and but maybe doesn't rise to the level of 911. You could also call the non-emergency number, and you can request a clinician. So there's two of us in each district, and depending on kind of where we are, there's different sectors, you know, but we will definitely try our best to respond if we are requested. So that's an option too.
Cool. Since there's not that many of you,
yeah,
compared to the amount of police that we have,
yes,
how is it determined where and what beats you sort of go on, or what neighborhoods or areas,
yeah,
you work in?
So DPD has awesome stats. Like their stats, like their data,
yeah.
But like their call stat, you know. So during this time, this neighborhood, like these are our highest call volume. They do an unbelievable job of like tracking their calls. So we could actually look and say like, this sector within this district at this time is where we'd be best utilized. So that's kind of how we've determined it. And a lot of the districts will kind of make us rotate through with officers. So like everyone has to ride with us. It's not like, you know, kind of like we're with the same ones all the time. So that's, we love that, because then we get to kind of go with everybody and meet everybody. But yeah, we're able to kind of narrow down where we'd be best utilized through their call data.
Do you think it would be realistic to have in the future more of what you're doing and less policing? Like, I know it's like sort of a question you may not be able to answer, but I,
yeah,
think because we see the police are handling a lot of things and a lot of it
for
is,
sure,
is not going well. Like, what could, how do you see that?
So what our big goal is we want to keep police in service to do police work, right? So if we get a call, or if we get something that we don't need police on, like a follow-up or, you know, a referral, we don't take them all the time. It's there if they're not needed, we want them, you know, doing crime stuff, right? I think I would love to see this kind of program implemented across the country. I think it's very needed. I think that you know, you would have a hard time finding a place that couldn't use social workers partnered with police. I think that the co-responder model, which means police and social worker in the car, is kind of our ideal, because it's that partnership and we learn from each other and we can collaborate. And, you know, it's really awesome when we can go out into the community and people are super resistant to the police, but they bring us and they're like, you know, here, talk to this clinician. And they just totally back off. And, you know, that person maybe had a positive interaction with law enforcement just because they brought a clinician. It's not that the officer necessarily did or didn't do anything, but they brought kind of someone who was maybe better trained and better able to deal with that situation than themselves. And they did the best for that member of their community that day, you know?
Sure.
So we were pretty intentional. We looked at a lot of other programs across the country, different co-responder models, and we wanted officers and social workers together in cars. And that works really well for us. So is there room for more of us and less police work in the future? I don't know that we'd stray from this model because it's been pretty awesome for us. Yeah, for sure.
Sure. You brought up restorative justice earlier. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that plays out maybe in the work that you do through this?
Yeah, for sure. So restorative justice is this kind of idea that, you know, you take people who have committed crimes or are in jail involved in the court system, and you kind of provide resources and treatment, and you kind of allow them to make amends with the community at large. Which I think is just a great idea. Not make amends like you have to go around apologizing to people on the street, but like, you know, you're like in the wellness court program, for instance, you know, you are hooked up with mental health services, help with housing, and you also participate in community service projects all across the city. And you go and, you know, pick up trash in a park or go plant flowers with public works or, you know, whatever it might be. And the clients love it. They love it. And I think it really involves them in a community that they might feel really ostracized and left out of, you know? And it gives them kind of some pride in where they live in their community because they are a part of it, you know? And it's just, I think, like a really, really good way of helping people who frequently cycle in and out of jail in the court systems to kind of work on what they want to work on and also feel like part of the community. And I think that's a big, big part of well-being and, you know, just overall happiness. I mean, if you don't feel like you fit in or you're accepted or wanted or you have any stake in where you live, I mean, that's pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like we're seeing that more and more as more and more folks are being pushed into the street. You and I were talking about this earlier too, the urban camping bans pushing of people into areas and so they're being served like by the library, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Biggest day shelter in Denver. This.
Yeah, because they're amazing and they're doing the work that needs to be done.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But you know, when people don't have anywhere to go or anywhere to hang out, you know, they will go to the library. It's for everybody, you know, it's air conditioned, heated, you know, it's a cool place to be and you don't get kicked out of there, right? So right. It's kind of de facto become
a space.
Yeah, and you know, but we have full-time social workers and peer navigators that work in the library and do a really awesome job. So I think that's kind of another aspect where Denver's kind of seen a need and tried to fill it. I mean, the peer navigators at the library, I mean, I'm just in awe of them. Then the work that they do with people, it's unbelievable. And these are all people, you know, with lived experience that are in recovery in some form themselves. And I'd love to see that. I think that's so great. And that's not something I can provide.
Yeah, I know it's a hard job. In the work that you've been doing, is there anything that the city could be doing better that you're seeing? I mean, I'm sure there's maybe a really long list of things you could see, but implementable things that could be done to prevent a lot of some of the situations that you continually see over and over again.
I would like to see more social impact bond housing. That's kind of my big thing. I think that's a big piece. I don't think that you can work on mental wellness, substance use, any of that stuff if you don't have a place to live. So I think that is the foundation that leads to kind of all the higher level stuff that we can help with or that you could work on. But, you know, how am I supposed to help you address your sobriety when you don't know where you're going to sleep or eat that night? I think that if people have a solid foundation, it sets them up for success kind of in the goals that they want to achieve going forward. So that would be my big ask.
Sure. I think it shows how housing is an issue that intersects with so many of the other issues that we're seeing in the city, and how many things could probably be solved if we had more places for folks to be in stable, you know what I mean, secure. Well,
and it's as simple as, like, if I don't have a place to look for you, it's really hard to, like, work on the stuff we're working on, you know, whether that's court stuff or we're trying to get you set up with treatment. You know, it's really hard to be consistent when you have so much instability in terms of housing and basic needs, you know? So I just feel like it's a big ask to ask people to address substance use or mental health when their basic needs aren't met.
Yeah, and that gets into, I think, a lot of the assumptions that folks that aren't experiencing that have about people that are, you know, in the throes of addiction while also being on the street,
yeah,
while also dealing with mental health issues, while also dealing with unemployment and trauma. And
yeah, know. the whole gamut, for sure. And, you know, it's really tough. And I think we'd have a lot more success if we had places for people to stay. You know, we'd see more success with that type of stuff, for sure. I mean, I like to think that, you know, we're super successful and we're out doing hard work every day, and, you know, we're meeting people where they're at and focusing on recovery, whatever that means to them, not whatever that means to us. But it's hard when people don't have the basics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you do any work with youth in the work that you do?
Yeah, so, you know, we respond to calls with minors and youth all the time. It's kind of funny because we all come from, like, the adult recovery side. So we were like, oh, my God, kids. Like, we never wanted to work with those people.
They're aliens who are totally different.
Like, oh, boy. So we do, you know, we get a lot of calls from parents or, you know, other issues that might involve youth and kids. And we have, through Mental Health Center Denver, the Dahlia campus, which is our child and family center. So that's where we would refer for that kind of stuff. And they treat the whole family, not just the child who's kind of struggling. So that's, I think, a great approach. Kind of family system stuff has always made more sense to me, I guess, as a clinician. But yeah, so we deal with a lot of that, and they've looked kind of at putting co-responders in DPS, and we've toyed around with that idea. But yeah, I mean, it's really tough. And I think that kids today are dealing with a lot more stressors. You know, I mean, I was so stressed as a teenager, but I think it's worse.
Absolutely.
Now with social media and just, I don't know, there just seems to be stuff going on that didn't go on 10, 15 years ago. So we do deal with a lot of those calls, yeah.
Do you know of any other programs similar to yours, maybe in the country, that are doing something that you would like to see happen here? Or
so we actually took. So I wasn't hired yet when they did this, but they went to, like, Seattle. They went. Kansas has a co-responder program. Go figure. And they kind of cherry picked what they liked from each program and made ours. So I think, I'm trying to think if there's any other cities. I think we kind of kill
You're
it.
Doing it good.
Yep.
You're
doing
it. That's awesome.
It's my humble opinion.
That's awesome. Well, Carly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a really interesting conversation. And I know you've got a bunch of stuff that
I brought
to share with us to talk more about, maybe how we as community members can do better than just calling 911 because somebody looks like they're, I don't know. I don't know why people do this, actually.
Out of place? I don't know.
Is somebody just standing on the street and it's bothering you. No.
Yeah.
But, like, things that maybe we could tell other people to do.
For sure,
in the
for
place
sure.
of calling the police or.
Absolutely.
Or doing that.
Absolutely. Got crisis line cards with all the walk-in center addresses listed on it. They're great resources, 24/7, 365. And I brought you some Mental Health Center Denver info too, just on kind of what services we provide and what we connect people to on these calls when we're in the community.
And actually, one more thing. What could we do sort of as citizens to advocate to bring more of like the program you're doing or something that we could do to elevate what you're doing?
Totally. I mean, we appreciate that one. I would just let your representatives know, your elected officials, I don't know if any of you guys go to your DPD community meetings, but that's a great place to give us a little shout out and tell them you like what we're doing. Because that's as long as those people are aware that we're doing what we're doing and we're killing it, then that's great. I mean, DPD knows, but you know, sure. Your council people or anything like that, you know, we appreciate that.
Cool. I'll open it up if anybody has any questions. Yeah, Annie, would you come up here and ask us in the mic? We're recording it, so it helps.
So my question was, how big is this team? How many of you are there assigned to officers? Like, you said DPD is good with stats. How many calls are you actually going out to, and maybe how many calls get labeled as mental health later but weren't originally that maybe someone should have gone to? I know it's like 10 questions.
No, well, the last one's like the data people. I can't tell you that. I'm sorry.
You might be getting great success, but is there like 10 of you, or is it 100 of you?
15. Okay. 15. We have two in each district, and then we have a behavioral health navigator in the jail. So we're citywide. All week. So we have someone that works the first end, you know, front end of the week, and someone that works the later end of the week in each district across the city. So there's several sectors within each district, and we're not in every sector, but the DPD does an awesome job of getting us where we need to go. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we hope that we expand even more because, I mean, be great to be able to get to every call.
Well, and I know you work in this capacity because you work... you're a public defender, right?
I have some public defender work, and I also work as a guardian ad litem. So
there
I
you
see
go.
A lot of stuff you're referencing. I'm like, I send people to MHCD all the time.
Yeah.
That's definitely something in my mind I think the city needs to support more, because there are so many calls coming through where you're seeing individuals. If this is a mental health crisis, this is not a need.
For sure.
For a law enforcement, for it to get physical. I mean, some social workers, I'm sure not in your capacity because you're going with officers, but in residential facilities, they're allowed to do physical managements. They're allowed to do some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how a safer hug would be better than a baton or a gun in someone's face. And that's something that social workers can do when they're trained that way. Officers, I'm not sure, with even 40 times 40 hours of this type of training, they're going to get the sensitivity they need to make the choice to implement that versus their hit first, ask later mentality.
And I get where that's coming from, but that's a big blanket statement too, you know what I mean? And I get where you're coming from, but that's not what I see on a daily basis. Yeah. That mentality is not what I encounter. I would not be part of this program sitting here talking to you if that's what we were faced with every day, you know what I mean? The majority of what I see is officers treating community members with respect and trying to help them the best they can at the time. Okay. And, you know, nothing is 100%, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? But I think that recently the culture surrounding law enforcement has gotten really negative, and I understand that there's a reason for that and why that's happened, but I want to say loud and clear that that's not my experience with DPD every day.
That's nice. Yeah, mine is not the same. I get the eye roll. I'm sick of these crazies. And I'm like, how do I correct everything you just said? How do we start with
that? Well, yeah, I think
and
more.
I will take over.
No, for sure. And I think that's a great point, Annie. And yeah. I think more professionals like Carly in those spaces could help diffuse that situation
for sure.
We have more social workers and less police officers, or most social workers, you know, because like we're looking at social work within the jail. We're looking at social work on the street with police or without, in the library. I mean, the library, it's really a radical idea.
Yeah, it is.
And it's also, it's an amazing thing, but it's also frustrating that the library has had to take on so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I know
our
mutual friend, Christy Schaefer, left the library social work situation to work in the jail as a social worker, and it's less stressful in the jail. And I know that's partially just because she's dealing with less people. She's literally not case managing you know, 50 people a day
versus,
you know, 17 to 20 people, which is just like, as one human person, you physically and mentally cannot take on helping that many people at once.
No, for sure. And then you just feel like you're failing every day, and that's terrible for your, you know, overall well-being and all that stuff. You know, I think that Denver's trying in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? They might not have it perfect, and we might not have everything that we need, but I see these little movements towards something that's really useful for people and really makes a difference, you know? And I'm from a place where we don't have co-responder program, and, you know, we just, that's not a thing. And I think that at the end of the day, if we could collaborate with officers and you know, they could learn from us and we could learn from them, you know, that's really a win for everybody, and it's a win for the community. And, you know, we have officers that will, that maybe don't have a clinician in their car that are calling us like, well, I got, you know, can anyone come out? You know, they're seeking out our expertise and our assistance. And I think that that speaks volumes, because they could totally just not do that if they didn't want to, you know what I mean? So that's the stuff that I am privy to on a daily basis that keeps my hope alive.
Hi, I'm a longtime Denver resident. In fact, I was born here. I live very close to here. I'm also a single parent who divorced a very abusive human being and raised children on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that you see positive things, but you really haven't lived till you saw your drunk 15-year-old under the fist of a Denver police officer that told me he was going to give her the beating that I should have. And that's just one of many examples that wouldn't enforce restraining orders, because he told me, I'm gonna take him out of the van, I'm gonna throw him up against the vehicle, and you're gonna have to deal with your crying kids, and I won't let you go in and get them. So I'm glad that's what you're seeing, but I think a lot of Denver residents have very different experiences.
And I in no way mean to negate those stories or experiences. I'm just here to speak about what we're trying to do and the success that we have. And, you know, that's a terrible thing to go through.
I think it's amazing, and I like what you're doing. And you're right, there needs to be more, because I have a mentally ill child, and I'm always wondering when they're going to kill her.
Right. And I think, and I like Carly said, she doesn't want to invalidate your experience. Not and I all. Absolutely feel you. And that was partially why I wanted to have this conversation, was because if this is happening, we have to know that it is. And to me,
I've filed complaints.
Sure.
Again, and no positive results.
And
none.
And I understand. And I wish I had
Bureau
a salute.
Internal Bureau of Investigation.
Can't speak on behalf of the department. And, you know, I am not meaning to invalidate or gloss over any of the tough stuff that comes along with this work. All I can do is go out there every day and try to make a difference and try to make it better. And that's what me and my team do every day. And I hope that you have a more positive experience in the future because of the work that we're doing.
No, I think you are doing good work, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I just think that it's just like, okay, I'm a VA ICU nurse. When I wear these scrubs and encounter a police officer, I have a vastly different experience than I do if I'm a single parent with a pair of jeans and a t-shirt on.
Right. And I didn't bring a police officer here for a reason. Like, I'm not here to talk to the police about how awesome the police are.
And some of them are. Some of them
right.
are good. But some of the other experiences I've had have been absolutely unbelievable.
Sure.
In a not a good way.
I mean, Ryan Ronquillo's mother is our neighbor, and he was murdered by police. Like, I feel you. I absolutely do, and I know that Carly does, too. But like I'm saying, the reason that I wanted to have this conversation was not to be pro-police, but to say we have a system, and it's not working.
And I guess and I wanted to put some stories to
sure.
some of the other stuff that's still going on in the city.
Absolutely, and so. I appreciate that. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
My question is if you're, I was wondering, one, if you're familiar with the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon, and Sorry, that kind of threw me a little bit because you're okay. My heart's breaking for her right now. Yeah, I actually work in a behavioral health hospital, and I was also an addictions counselor. Mm-hmm. So for me, the CAHOOTS program is my ideal model, and I was wondering how you feel about maybe co-responding and that program together.
Could you educate me on that a bit?
So CAHOOTS is a crisis intervention program implemented in Eugene, Oregon by the White Bird Clinic. You can look it up. They have a website. It's dispatched through the same line as police, fire, ambulance, and it's a it's a crisis intervention person. I'm not sure if they do social work, but also a medic.
Okay.
And that's the team that's dispatched. They have their own ambulance. They respond to all manner of crisis without having to have police there unless they need them. Mm-hmm. So people that are in really need of crisis, they're not going to call the police.
Right.
But that's a number that they can call, and they can feel safe calling and actually get the services that they need, because like she said, the experience that you're seeing with police is because you're there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the experience that, you know, they're pairing you with police that are going to work well with you. They're not going to pair you with the kind that she's seeing. You see what I mean?
Well, we rotate through every officer in a district, likely. And I'm not, I want to make it very clear that I'm not here to, you know, change anybody's opinion or promote an agenda. I'm just here to talk about the work that I do. I feel like we're getting into like a weird where, you know, like trying to change people's minds or come and push my own agenda. And that's really not what I'm doing at all. And I just want to make that very clear.
That wasn't my implication.
No. And just across the board, you know, I'm just here to kind of talk about what I do on a day-to-day basis and share my experiences with you. I think that sounds like an awesome program in Eugene and probably super well utilized by the people there. You know, we started a co-responder model, which means clinicians and police together. So that's what we were aiming for. And that could probably be an awesome addition or an awesome alternative, you know, when police aren't needed or...
I just feel like you have the access to the system that we don't have. So,
Do you know how people, like, do they have a separate number that people can call or, okay?
Yeah, so when you call the non-emergency line, there's a non-emergency police line and then there's a non-emergency CAHOOTS line too.
Okay, because awesome. You make a great point. Somebody,
I actually had a talk with them at this, like, kind of the same situation. So.
Well, and you make a good point that someone that's in a crisis that clearly does not want to call the police. Right. No, I'm not either. But like they have a model that will bring all of the things that are needed, mental and physical and all of those things. And I think Kaylin had mentioned to me about the CAHOOTS program and I meant to look into it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I'd love to look more into that program too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hello. I was just curious how, do you answer to the same, do you have like the same boss as the police do?
No.
How separate or how together?
Very separate. We are not city employees. We're not employed by the Denver Police Department. We're Mental Health Center of Denver employees, and we partner with police. So we are in no way, under the same kind of command or we're not even city employees.
Cool. I hope it like stay like that because I think it provides a good potential check and balance on that. Because I had a friend who went on a ride along who wanted to be a police officer, mm-hmm. and she was female, and she ended up not doing it because she said she didn't like the culture. And I think it's definitely kind of what everybody's been talking about. Maybe because you're seeing something different, it's because you're riding along, and you don't answer to the same boss. Because I've even known the person who was like the internal investigations, and that was like, she got pushed out, you know? So it's like interesting, like, I just think it's cool. I hope that it continues to stay.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we expanded by a lot. So, they see the value and see the value in adding more people. It's great that we work for Mental Health Center Denver, because then we have kind of a direct line into those services and connecting people to those services. So that helps us and helps the clients as well. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Cool. Did you have a question?
Okay, so if there's like two of you per district per week, in an ideal world, would there be one of you with every officer, or do you think that it would ever need, to me, it seems like this is definitely a great start, but how do you flag the people who really need it, who A,
for sure,
aren't being registered as a mental health call, mm-hmm, or maybe you're already busy over here, or maybe it's a different time of the day, because sure, I assume you're not working the whole shift.
No. Yeah, we've worked 10 to 10, so 3-12, so we are there for the whole shift. And the good thing about being in the cars all the time is that even if we end up on something that didn't come in as a mental health call, we're there. So if it ends up being a mental health call, that's great. I don't know that every officer would be like the ideal, because I think there's certain areas, certain sectors that just don't have the call volume to warrant a clinician full time. So maybe I think my idea would be to look at where we have the highest call volume, where we have the, in what district and what sector that is, and be able to fully staff all those areas. So that's what we're working towards. We just got the expansion in May, so pretty new for us. Thanks.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Carly.
Thank
you. This has been really wonderful.
I appreciate it.
Thank you all for being here, and thank you for your questions and for your honesty. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.